Chapter 7. The Midnight Orchestra. When the Midnight Orchestra begins to play, every hair on my arms rises. The breath leaves my body. My soul leaves the ground. There is no bombastic flare of trumpets, no loud clashing first notes. Instead, they play deliberately, slowly, easing into their piece with a precision that holds everyone around me speechless. The melody is like a forgotten dream, familiar and strange, sinking into my skin and wrapping around my bones, making me feel heavier and lighter at the same time, as if my spirit were lifting right out of me. The man in black, Mr. Midnight, has vanished, and no conductor appears to take his place. There are only the musicians below us, seated in a spiral. They play with such discipline that they look almost like dolls, especially with those painted masks on. No sheet music is arranged in front of them. No music stands are assembled. None turn to look at the others, but focus only on their own instruments, or, when they have a rest, stare straight ahead. I try to imagine the Mistwick students performing with such perfected movements. Even the best of the seniors couldn't sit that still. Soon, magic begins sparkling from the instruments as the spell's strength grows, pale yellow light blossoming and stretching like a brilliant, flourishing garden. Deep, rolling drum beats send up bursts of magic like fireworks. Sand begins to rise from the desert around us, streaming in glinting rivers to gather over the orchestra. Sparkling like glass, it swirls in a great glittering cloud over our heads. Then, slowly, the magic sends out tendrils, flowing rivers of sand that slowly arc through the sky and pour downward. When they touch the ground, they gather into the shapes of horses. One appears right in front of me, honey gold, its hide almost but not quite solid. Here and there, I can still see the rough texture of the sand, as if the creature might return to the desert at any moment. It has a saddle and a rope halter with tassels, also made of flowing sand, and its mane and tail stream into the ground. It's hard to tell where the horse ends and the desert begins. All around the amphitheater, guests start climbing onto the horses, as though that's what the creatures were waiting for. I look around and see that most of the guests have already mounted, and their horses are starting to trot away. I've never ridden on a horse. I don't much want to, either. At least, that's what I tell myself. The creature is just so beautiful. Before I half know what I'm doing, I put my foot in the stirrup, only to grab in vain at the saddle and drop down. It's just as well. For all I know, this is how the kidnappers really get me, by tricking me into riding this thing off to my doom. The remaining guests are on their horses now, some sitting side saddle. The orchestra plays on, its golden magic dancing all around us, infusing the sand horses' manes and tails, their hooves glowing with it. I'm the only person still on the ground. The musicians don't seem to notice. In fact, they don't seem to notice anything. They play on with robotic stillness, never looking up from their instruments to see the magic they're unfurling. If I didn't know that magic can only flow from living musicians, I might think they're animatronic.
"Give me your foot, girl,"
says soft, deep voice. I turn, my eyes widening. The man himself stands there, Mr. Midnight, the guy who runs this whole show. His dark blue eyes stare at me through the narrow holes in his mask. They're the only part of his face that I can see. "Excuse me?" I say.
"Your foot."
He kneels on one knee and laces his fingers together. His black leather gloves, probably more expensive than anything I've ever owned. And he wants me to put my dirty shoe on them? Obey instructions. Make them see you as a person. I plant my foot on his hands, and he lifts me up easily. Settling into the saddle, I blink at him. "Thanks." He stares at me a moment more, then says,
"Amelia Jones, is it? The little girl who rent a tear in the veil between life and death. Most impressive."
You've heard of me? So I was right. This is about my black spell.
I make it a point to know all my guests,
Mr. Midnight says,
especially the ones with gifts like yours.
He leans closer, his hand on the sand horse's neck.
What if I told you I could make you the greatest composer of your generation?
Uneasily, I tighten my hands on the saddle. I already have a composing maestro, thanks. With a scoff, he dashes a hand through the air.
I assure you, the things I could teach you, no maestro would dare. They will treat you like a child. They will hold you back from your true potential. But I know you could be a star.
He reaches into an inner pocket and takes out a small glass vial, which he hands to me.
Let's call this our first lesson.
I hold it up to see a single dandelion seed inside. What is it?
To most, it is nothing. To you, it is everything.
He taps the vial.
It contains a single memory infused with emotive energy, a spell's greatest source of fuel. When you're ready, simply bite the seed and absorb the memory, and you can compose a spell that would rattle the sky.
Seriously? I've never heard of such a thing. Then again, I know practically nothing about composing to begin with. Mr. Midnight tips his head.
All great composers borrow memories for their magic. But I'll bet your maestros would never tell you that.
Okay, but isn't that sort of cheating? Even through his mask, I can tell he's offended.
Cheating? Is it cheating when a painter uses a model for reference? Is it cheating when a sprinter wears the best running shoes? Here at the Midnight Orchestra, we deal in magic and favors and wonders beyond imagination. Not cheating.
What's it cost? If there's one thing I've learned from Grand's TV shopping channel habits, it's that most deals that sound too good to be true aren't.
Never mind that. Let's call it a favor for a favor. An investment in a young musician I find to be exceptionally promising.
His eyes crease as he smiles under his mask.
I never ask for payment a guest cannot afford.
I don't know. I think I'd better not. I start to hand it back, but he steps away and bows.
Handle it with care, Miss Jones. There is great power in that small vial.
Mr. Midnight whistles, and my horse leaps into motion, cantering up the amphitheater steps to join the others. I kick myself. I just talked to the guy in charge of this whole thing. I should have asked him why I was here, and what he wanted from me, and when I could go home. I'd been so overwhelmed, my brain seemed to just shut down. And what's with all the "I could make you the greatest composer" weirdness? I know a shady deal when I hear one. And yet, Mr. Midnight's voice echoes softly in my head. I know you could be a star. Then, all at once, my horse's hooves leave the ground, and I forget all about Mr. Midnight and his offer. I still have the dandelion seed in my hand, and I slip it into my pocket so I can hold on. The horses take flight together, trotting on empty air. All around the amphitheater, born on a cloud of music, the enchanted creatures begin rising in a spiraling path to the stars. Sand falls away from their manes and tails. Motes of gleaming magic dance around their hooves. Sparkling dust floats between us and all around. It's like a carousel in the sky. These kidnappers have style. I have to give them that. Beautiful as it all may be, I cling to my sand horse and hope to balk the whole creature doesn't suddenly disintegrate, or that I topple off. Either seems unnervingly likely. Higher and higher the horses fly, spiraling toward that huge canopy of stars. It really does feel like riding a carousel, the horse's motion smooth and serene. And gradually I relax. Well, a little bit, anyway. My death grip on the creature's mane loosens a tad. Far below, the musicians of the Midnight Orchestra slide seamlessly into the next movement of their symphony, the tumbling measures propelled by the rolling drumbeats of the percussionists. Humming violins produce banners of magic that flutter upward, chased by the bright sparks of light sent flying from the French horns, oboes, and clarinets. When the trombones come in, a burst of magic shimmers upward, robust and swelling, like the bubbles in the champagne Graham always pours for herself on Christmas Day. The air is thick with more magic than I knew could exist in the world at once. The night crackles with energy and light. Magic runs through the sky in golden veins, pulsing gently in tempo with the symphony. It feels like no time at all passes, or perhaps the entire night. It's hard to tell, because I feel half entranced myself. Perhaps there is some white magic threaded through the orchestra's yellow, working its mental enchantments, because my mind feels foggy with wonder. The tension eases out of my brain, worries popping like the bubbles of magic around me. And then, all at once, I realize we've landed in the same spot we took off from, so lightly I didn't even notice. The carousel ride is over. Sliding down, I land on my feet, swaying a little, as if I've just got off a long boat ride and the ground is unsteady. With a shake of its mane, the horse collapses, a pile of sand once more. Sadness tugs at me to see it go. All the other guests look just as dazed as I feel, wandering around in a dreamlike way. In the amphitheater, the musicians begin to close their spell. As their notes fade out, the glassy dome that had first concealed the midnight orchestra forms again, swallowing them up and then sealing itself over their heads before turning completely opaque. Once more, it looks like an empty stage, and silence falls over the amphitheater and the desert beyond. All around me, people burst into applause.
"Distinguished guests of the Midnight Orchestra."
It's Mr. Stewart, standing near the doorway in the dune.
"We hope you have enjoyed tonight's performance. Your home portals will be reopened momentarily. We hope to see you all again under the next full moon."
Guests stream out of the amphitheater, a long line of masked faces. The lady in the emerald dress waves at me cheerily.
"This way, Miss Jones."
Mr. Stewart ushers me through the archway. "How do I know you'll send me back to Mistwick?" I ask him, mentally adding, "Not the middle of the ocean or the surface of Mars or some creepy basement in Kansas."
"Because, Miss Jones, I'm about to open a Midnight Orchestra exclusive. A cerebro-directional, interdimensional, geo-extensional portal."
"A what?"
"When you step through, think of where you want to go, and you'll find that place on the other side."
Before I can say another word, he fires up his bagpipes and blasts a spell. I have to step back, hands over ears, as the sheer volume of the sound hits me like a blast of wind. Purple magic erupts from the pipes and swirls in front of me, opening a portal like the one I saw in the woods, though this one's rougher around the edges, its tattered sides bleeding into the air around it. Well, what choice do I have, really? Whatever's through that portal can't be much worse than here. I'll just have to take the risk. I walk toward the portal, my shoes sliding on the sand, and look down at the dandelion seed in my hand. I should throw the vial away before I go through. I should crush it under my shoe until it's ground into the sand. But at the last minute, my fingers tighten around it. There is great power in that small vial. As I step through the shimmering portal over the sand, I slip my hand into my pocket and drop the seed inside.